Grab a seat and keep listening to 95.3 WBEV, powered by Daily Dodge, broadcasting from the Slumberland Furniture Studio.
It is 12:32 in Beaver Dam. You are listening to Community Comment. Here's our host, Kevin Haugen.
Well, thank you very much, and good afternoon. Welcome into today's Community Comment. Our guest on the program this afternoon, joining me via phone today, as it has been a busy couple of days here where he's calling from in the capital of Madison here, State Representative Mark Bourne. Mark, thank you so much for taking some of your time this afternoon to join us here on Community Comment today.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good to be with you. A lot of stuff going on, so looking forward to chat about some of that.
Great. Yeah, it's been a busy a couple of days. The governor just gave his budget address on Tuesday night. A lot of news has come out even before that address took place, in the wake of that address. Sure. And let's start with that topic, Mark. And just what are some of the highlights from the governor's budget address from this past Tuesday, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, maybe from my point of view, and I think the point of view of a lot of taxpayers, I would maybe call them lowlights instead of highlights, but a lot of concerns, more of the same, so I can't say I was surprised. We've kind of gotten used to this. You know, this is the governor's fourth budget now. It's kind of more of the same old liberal wish list of ideas, trying to take the state backwards. Manages to turn a $4 billion surplus into a $4 billion deficit in just a few years, which is kind of interesting. Includes a lot of tax increases. Tuesday night, if for folks that listened to the speech or watched the coverage that night or the next day, you know, he was highlighting some tax cuts that are in his plan, but the reality is he's got far more tax increases, over $3 billion so far that we've been able to tabulate, and still working on that. So massive spending increases, lots of ways to grow government, and so that's kind of concerning. It's kind of disappointing, but it's been what we've been used to from this governor. So I guess that's just what we've come to expect, and know that we'll just have to start from scratch, work from a base budget to build a more responsible budget for Wisconsin.
Yeah, and we'll dive in just a couple of minutes, really kind of what the next couple of months will look like. We'll talk about Mark's role in that. As a co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, they play a big part here now in the next several months. Really, as you mentioned, in most circumstances that we've seen, every time the governor's given an address, we hear the words "built from base," and we'll talk about that more in just a few minutes. But, Mark, sure. You talked about tax cuts and I know that's been something that we've talked about on this program before. It's been a focal point of the legislature the last couple of sessions to get a tax bill on the governor's desk, to get something that he can sign and get approved. And where are we at now with the governor bringing up, I think it was around a $2 billion tax cuts here that he proposed in his budget address. As we sit here today, obviously still many a weeks and months to go into work and to dive deeper into this, but what are your thoughts here as we sit just a couple of days after the governor announced that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, he's got he does have some tax cuts in there, but like I mentioned, he also has a lot of massive tax increases, and I think you know, that's maybe one of the things that was most surprising to me, or maybe what one of the key differences are from his previous budgets, is he's always had tax increases. He's your typical tax and spend liberal governor, but it's never been to this magnitude. And so when he spent all that time on Tuesday night talking about his tax cuts and not mentioning any of these increases, and then we start to see the massive increases he has in there far further than ever before. I mean, he creates an entire new tax rate for top earners in the state that makes it one of the highest rates in the country, comparable to stuff like you see in California. I mean, really unusual. And so I think without even diving into the details yet of the tax cuts, which I can in just a moment, but just the stark difference there in what we see in this budget with the massive increases makes me think that this governor is not serious about cutting taxes when his budget overall increases so much. So I think that's concerning to start with, because the reality is we need to have, as I've talked about before on Community Comment, you know, a balance between those key investments that we do in state budgets in areas of priority, like education and roads and healthcare and things, but also sound tax policy to be competitive in the Midwest for our economy and to put more money into the families of Wisconsin during these high inflationary times. And I just feel with, even though he spent a lot of lip service in his speech on Tuesday night, when you look at this budget now that we're just starting to go through, you know, we've had it for whatever, 36 hours or something probably, it's just the increases, the tax increases are just stunning. Now, as far as some of his proposals for tax relief, you know, a lot of us feel like any tax cut's a good tax cut that thinks it's important. So, you know, we can probably try to find some pieces that we could put into our package. You know, he talked about the no tax on tips. That's something that's been talked about nationally as well. You know, things like that. They're one of the things he had in there, which I thought was interesting, he mentioned in the speech, was to take the sales tax off of your energy bill. So that could provide a little relief maybe for families on those, you know, the cost of your gas and electric bill. And I thought that was interesting for a couple of reasons. Again, relief for families good. Also because I think it was probably, I don't know, at least a year ago, maybe longer, someone called into Community Comment when I was on and suggested just that thing. So a listener, you know, some time ago suggested taking that sales tax off. So I thought it was interesting that that came up and that we should look into it more. But then, again, as an example of when we dive into the governor's actual budget proposal, he does have in there to remove that sales tax from the utility bills. But then he also creates a brand new tax of an equal amount, $100 million, on Wisconsin utilities. Well, when you do that, that's obviously going to get passed on to ratepayers, and it doesn't actually provide any relief on the bill then. It's just a gimmick. And so that's the kind of stuff that we got to watch out for. And so I think as we put our tax package together, we're going to look at having a significant impact on income taxes, certainly in this state. And we might look at a few other things, like maybe it is time to take that sales tax off of there, but we're not going to bring another hidden tax and actually have your utility rates go up. We're going to make sure that it is true tax relief.
State Representative Mark Bourne here on the phone on Community Comment this afternoon talking about our main topic here, the governor's budget proposal. He gave his address just a couple of days ago outlining his priorities for the state. Mark, one of the priorities and something that has been running its way through the news cycles last couple of days, especially in our area of importance with Waupun just being about a half hour north of where we are here in Beaver Dam, the prisons, the number of prisons in that city as well. But the governor outlined quite the proposal when it came to addressing the Department of Corrections here in the state of Wisconsin. Just as you had a chance to look through some of those proposals and changes, what did you take away from what the governor was looking to do?
Yeah, as you said, they did put out a pretty good size proposal on it a few days before the budget address. I did have a chance to talk with some Department of Corrections staff this past weekend before it was released to kind of talk through some of what they were thinking. And like most plans from this governor, it's a mixed bag. I think about it as if we think back to last budget, the governor put in, you know, kind of a half-baked idea for some shared revenue reform. He put in a half-baked idea to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee and playing at American Family Field for a long time into the future. And the legislature had to take both those ideas and work with stakeholders to develop them a lot further, improve them. In the case of the Brewers plan, to improve it for the taxpayers and save the taxpayers the money and make sure that the Brewers were paying more and the local governments were paying more and stuff. So I view this corrections plan as kind of the same thing. It's got some decent ideas in it, but it's kind of half-baked. It's certainly going to need some more work. Some of the things that I really like in it is that the governor has finally recognized, after 6 years of folks like me telling him that we needed to do something with our two oldest prisons in Waupun and Green Bay, that we could no longer afford financially or for the safety of staff and the folks that are incarcerated there to keep running those old facilities exactly as we have been. And so I'm glad he's finally recognized that. I'm also really glad that he recognized the importance of Waupun Correctional to the city of Waupun, and I would argue even our region. It's a much different circumstances that I know the mayor's talked about this a lot than it is in Green Bay. So to be suggesting to close Green Bay is a good thing. To be suggesting that there's a future for Waupun, I think is a great thing and certainly something that I've been advocating for. Now, you know, so those are good steps in the right direction. At least he's finally acknowledged there's problems here and there's things we should do. Now, I don't think that some of the numbers are realistic that they brought forward for the costs. I'm concerned, much as I think Sheriff Schmidt is. I know he put out a release the other day, and I've talked a little bit about his concerns. We're both very concerned with it from a public safety aspect. I think the governor is looking at this as a way, you know, he talks about it being cheaper to do it this way, which there may be some truth to that. But it's not all just about the price tag. It has to be a product that works, and it has to work for public safety. It has to work for the corrections staff that have to run these facilities. And so we got to look at all of that, and I think that we're going to need probably more resources. I think we're going to probably have to make some changes. But at least to have the governor recognizing the importance of making some reforms in this area for both the ongoing operational costs of these old prisons as well as for addressing public safety needs is a positive step in the right direction. We're just going to have to do some work to improve the plan.
And Mark, what are a few of the legislative priorities for this upcoming biennial budget?
Well, I think we've already talked a little bit, and I know last month when I was on too, that step one, it has to be some tax reform, because that didn't get done last time. The governor's vetoed every tax reform. We sent them a lot of different things. So we're going to focus on trying to provide some tax relief to retirees. We're going to focus on trying to provide some broad-based middle-class tax cuts. I think then beyond that, there's always some, you know, key areas of investment. The things I hear about most in the district still usually are roads, especially local roads. So we're certainly going to look to continue to increase funding, as we have for several budgets now, into infrastructure like roads. You know, last budget we created, it's usually referred to as ARIP, but it's an agricultural road program that specifically targets, you know, more rural roads that have a significant impact on our ag community or our ag economy, you could say. So maybe it's because there's a cheese plant on that town road, or maybe because there's a big dairy farm there. But it's you know, local governments need extra money to maintain those roads so that we can have the equipment and the vehicles and stuff on those roads to continue that commerce. And that was a very popular program, and so I think we're going to look, you know, we'll certainly look to continue to support that program as just one example of some of that local road investment. I think that there's always interest in investing in things like healthcare and keeping it more accessible and affordable. Here in Wisconsin, there's always interest in education, so you will certainly see a lot of discussion in those areas. Now, much like last time, I don't think it'd be a surprise to anyone, there's no way we'll spend anywhere near the amount in education that the governor is suggesting. We funded it at record levels last budget, and I think he's suggesting that we should more than triple that in this budget, which is just, you know, really on its face kind of ridiculous, and part of how you take a state from a sound financial position of surpluses and run into a deficit in no time with just, you know, really reckless spending. But we'll still invest in some of those same key areas, just not in really ridiculous levels.
State Representative Mark Bourne here on Community Comment this afternoon. Mark, if you could just sort of talk about what the next steps in this budget process is, and what role you will be playing as this state budget begins to essentially start crafting it again and working on getting something that could eventually be signed by Governor Tony Evers.
Yeah, so we're really just in the first almost hours of the legislative budget process now. It started Tuesday night. I think it was probably about, I don't know, 8:30 or so that we were in the Finance Committee introducing the executive budget. So now it becomes a legislative budget process. You know, the governor's been doing his work with his agencies since last fall. And now it's the legislature's turn. So we're beginning to dive into his budget to understand what his requests and suggestions are. Our nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau, so the professional analysts that we have in the legislature are going through the document, and will probably in about a month's time. It usually takes them about a month, so probably in mid-March, they will put out a summary of everything that the governor has proposed with great details and explanation to help us make sure we understand what kind of stuff he put into his budget and, you know, what direction we will want to go from there. Then, in the meantime, we will begin the process of talking to folks around the state, both as individual representatives, and I imagine we'll probably talk a little bit more about that later, and I know that you've already covered for my press release with some of my upcoming listening sessions in the district. So individual legislators will do that. We will do the road show, most likely in April. That is the Joint Finance Committee traveling to different parts of the state to hear from folks, to make sure that we're putting together a budget for all of Wisconsin, not just you know, somebody's wish list, which is in some ways kind of what the executive budget has become, but a budget for all of Wisconsin. And as we work through that process, then we'll get to the point probably in May, where we'll start to meet in as a committee, a joint finance committee, in the executive session, and start crafting the legislative budget. And as I think it was indicated earlier, you know, the governor's document is really not workable. It's just got way too much policy and extra junk that just doesn't belong in a budget. So we'll start like we have the last several budgets by tossing that aside and, you know, generally saying it's usually work from scratch, something like that. It's actually working from base, the base budget, the current law. And I know sometimes people say, you know, why do you have to be so partisan that you can't work together and work with his budget? And I would just suggest to people that, you know, if it's not a workable document, it's not a workable document. But folks need to remember that current law, the budget that we're currently working under, that is bipartisan because it was passed by the legislature that was in Republican control, and it was signed by the Democrat governor, and that's the law that we're currently under. So, you know, we're not working with him at all. We're just not working with this particular document that's just not workable. We're going to go back to base, something that we all agreed on last budget cycle, and we'll build from there. And then, you know, the goal is to get to a place again where we can agree and have a budget signed in the law, hopefully by July 1st. That's usually the target date. The state fiscal year ends June 30th. You know, if we don't make that for some reason, we're not like the federal government where the government shuts down. We just continue to fund at base levels until the budget's done. So most things will go on unnoticed to folks. But right now, you know, since we just started here a day and a half ago, we're still on schedule. We're not off the rails yet. So chugging along through the process.
Okay, I'm sure we'll have future conversations and get further updates as this process continues with Mark Bourne here in the coming weeks and months. And Mark, you mentioned that there are upcoming budget listening sessions within your district that you'll be holding here in the next several weeks. I know for sure Beaver Dams is March 3rd, I want to say, off the top of my head, is the date for that one. Again, we do have that story on our website, dailydodge.com, with all the locations, times, and dates that people can attend. And obviously, that's a great way for people to be engaged in this process and express what they're hoping to see achieved in this budget document. And Mark, is there other ways that, say, if people can't make these listening sessions here in the next couple of weeks, is there other ways that people can reach out to your office and get a hold of you and express their own opinions about the budget?
Yes, definitely. And, you know, that's, I appreciate, you know, continuing support from the radio of putting these sorts of things out for people, so people can have these opportunities to interact at these listening sessions. But that's only one of many ways. And so, you know, if you can't make those, you know, we've got the first ones coming up on Friday, February 28th in the Fox Lake and Randolph area, and then continuing throughout the district. I think we've got 9 or 10 of them. But there are certainly always other ways to get involved or to reach out. And you can start always by contacting the office on the phone or by email, and either just expressing those opinions through that way or asking for different opportunities to do so. You know, I also I'm setting up meetings throughout the district at civic clubs and chambers where I'll be doing, you know, presentations and stuff too in the coming months. And so while those aren't always public events for folks that are members of those things, they'll certainly be aware of them, and those are other opportunities than if it's something that is needs to be, you know, more time than just an email or a phone call. We can always set up individual phone calls or individual meetings in the district. We do those all the time too. If folks really have something that they think needs more time or more detail to talk about, that might take a little more time. You know, there's all kinds of ways to do that, and these listening sessions are one opportunity. It's a chance for me to get out into a variety of parts of the district. I know one of the things that we've got them scheduled on mostly Mondays and Fridays, because those are usually the days that I'm more likely to be in the district. We've always now, I shouldn't say always, but for years now, we've scheduled a Saturday one because that's usually well attended. So we do have one on Saturday, March 1st in Burnett. There's always a small handful of people that are critical of that they're usually scheduled during the day. You know, why aren't they scheduled at night when people aren't working? And, you know, that's why it's the point is it's one of many examples. And, you know, we know from experience when I've hosted them at night, they're never well attended. In fact, the last one I had at a 7 p.m. time, I was there by myself, you know, and so we just decided, like, these are not well attended. This isn't a good use of our time. We can do this other ways on the phone or with individual meetings and stuff. If there's someone that, you know, really wants that opportunity that can't make one of these 10 listening sessions, it just seems like a much more efficient way to schedule these interactions. So that's what we've done for some years now. In some areas like Beaver Dam, you know, historically they're always really well attended. I'm guessing Waupun, being a new area and a pretty active city, will be well attended. But even in those smaller areas, when I get, you know, 6-8 people in a small town or something like that, I find that to be both well attended and actually, you know, just really helpful to get a variety of viewpoints and thoughts from people all around the district, which is why we do so many of them. A lot of my colleagues, I think, only do 2 or 3, but I like to get out in different places and make sure I'm in the rural areas and stuff too. So this is one of a great example, and I certainly enjoy doing them.
It's with State Representative Mark Bourne here on Community Comment this afternoon. And Mark, obviously, you know, budget conversations have dominated the headlines, and I'm sure has dominated a lot of the conversations you've been a part of this last couple of weeks. But as we wind down here our time on Community Comment this afternoon, obviously there's still other work happening at the Capitol. What are some of the bills that the Assembly worked on during the floor session this past week? I just want to give you a few minutes to let our listeners know what's been happening on the floor in the past couple of days.
Yeah, in the middle of all of this budget stuff this week, which was already a super busy week, we did go onto the Assembly floor yesterday and pass a handful of bills that were pretty important and focused on something that's pretty important when it comes to the state of Wisconsin. And they were focused on education and really education accountability, or things that we can do to help in the classrooms to improve outcomes here in Wisconsin. There's been a fair amount of coverage recently about just the really disturbing data that we're seeing when it comes to reading, especially reading in our schools here in Wisconsin. The number of kids that are not able to read proficiently at grade level in some of the elementary grades is quite concerning. It gets even more concerning when we start looking at it based on race data in some of our larger cities. Like, we're far behind even the national averages in some of those areas. And it's getting to be more of a concern, I think, for the legislature, taxpayers, families, when you look at that data and then also look at the reality of the amount of money that we are spending. You know, like I mentioned earlier, we increased at record levels last budget in education, and then see this data continuing to go in the wrong direction. So at some point, we've got to pause from it and say, all right, we obviously can't just buy our way out of this. We can't just keep flooding this with money and doing the same thing and pretend that somehow this is going to miraculously fix itself. So some of the legislation that we passed here, and none of it will fix this by itself, but some of it was basic stuff like saying, you know what, the state school superintendent recently changed the standards that we used to grade, to kind of judge, to communicate what's going on in our schools. And she weakened those standards. Well, why? You know, we're already failing a lot of our kids, And now we're lowering the standards to try to make it look like we're doing better when we know we're not. That's a real problem. So the first bill was saying, you know what, let's just go back to those original standards and try to work to meet those, not to lower our expectations. Let's go back to the standards that really Tony Evers had in place when he was the DPI superintendent. So it's not like it's, you know, some partisan standard or something like that. You know, so that was step one. Some of the other things that we passed yesterday in the assembly were to say, you know what, we know that cell phones are having a really negative impact on the mental health and the ability of our kids to learn in schools. And a lot of schools have already done a good job on this and have policies to keep cell phones out of the classroom. But some of them, you know, might not go far enough, or some of them are not doing it at all. And we want, as a state, as we recognize this investment that we're making in education and the importance of it, to have a standard to say cell phones should not be in the classrooms. Now, we didn't mandate it in such a way that there's a specific state rule of how that has to work. The mandate is to say, local school boards, you have to have a policy. You have to have to craft a policy that keeps, at a minimum, keeps these out of the classroom, distracting from learning. Now, that's why it's a minimum, and it's up to the school board. Some schools have said we don't want them in the lunchroom either. We don't want them in the library. We don't want them in athletic events, whatever. You know, that's all fine, too, and probably good things for our kids. But those are local decisions still. We just want to make sure there's at least a statewide minimum to say, you know what, this stuff's got to be out of the classroom. Now, of course, there are exceptions to that. The school-provided devices are not included in that, because if the teacher is using the school-provided device for learning or teaching, that's different. It's more of these personal devices. Everybody's got their phones and their watches, and they're distracted and not learning and on social media. That's the stuff that we're trying to stop there. We ended up doing six bills. I think the last one that I want to highlight, so I'll just highlight half of them, is one that said, you know what, we're spending all this money, but there's a lot of data that's showing that a lot of it's going into administration and a lot of bloat in these schools. And we got to get the money into the classroom where it's having the impact on the kids. So the bill says 70% of the money that schools are spending needs to get it back into the classroom. You know, some people might question, well, 70%, that's not even, you know, why wouldn't it be all of it or even more of it? But we've got schools that are a far cry from 70%, so that would be a good improvement alone, as well as there's things that are going to happen outside of the classroom, like you got to have some administration, you got to have busing, things like that. But, you know, we got to get more of these resources into the classroom, supporting teachers. I mean, some of it is even part of the bill said that you put some restriction on how much you're raising your admin wages. Because we're seeing some of these administrators get massive raises of, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9%, and then teachers are getting 2% raises. Well, we need to bring those more in line. If you think you need to pay your principals and stuff so much more, then you need to be paying your teachers more, too. And that's getting that money back into the classroom, paying the people that are, you know, trying to make it happen, trying to teach these kids, and they're seeing more and more of their resources diverted out to other junk. And that's a problem. So, you know, when we're putting record levels of funding in the last budget, we're being asked to make large investments again. We got to start having more accountability in the schools, in the classrooms, and I think these bills are all things that can help with that.
We're with State Representative Mark Bourne here on Community Comment, wrapping up our time with the representative. Want to thank Mark Bourne one last time for joining us here on Community Comment today. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us here on Community Comment.
Thank you. Always good to be with you.
And that will do it for today's Community Comment.
From the Slumberland Furniture.